Hello. My name is Amanda Pennick, and I'm from UC Berkeley. I'm a PhD candidate in the School of Social Welfare, and I'll actually be receiving my PhD 3 weeks from tomorrow. I'm very excited. I've been in college for 10 years, so it's a long time coming. And I decided to do my dissertation research on medical cannabis facilities in the San Francisco Bay Area. And the reason I decided to do that was kind of threefold. I felt like I was really in a unique position to do this kind of research, and as Ethan Nadelman so eloquently put it before, start to legitimize what was going on in some of these facilities in San Francisco so that when other states that have passed medical marijuana legislation wanted to open up the same kind of facilities to protect their patients from having to go and get their medicine on the black market, we could develop some kind of model of best practice so that we could take it on the road, so to speak, and start to develop other facilities utilizing and preserving what has really come out of Dennis Perone's movement in the Social Model Club here in San Francisco. So again, the three reasons I decided to get into this was that, one, I'm a patient myself. So moving out here from Chicago in 2002, I was really impressed with what was going on in the movement, and I thought that it was something that really needed to be shared. And I was also kind of tired of the news stories that talked about medical cannabis dispensaries, because they always show the same picture, either a really large bag of weed or somebody smoking out of the exact same pipe. I think they've been using that same shot and that same pipe for like 3 or 4 years. And what I was seeing was very different. I was seeing support, and I was seeing patients who were ill getting a lot of camaraderie from each other. And I was seeing, you know, products being sold like books and magazines and t-shirts. And I was seeing activism being generated in these facilities. And that's what I wanted to get out to the public. And I thought that if we could demystify a bit what was going on and really show the positive things that were coming out of this movement, then maybe when we wanted to go develop a facility system in, say, Montana, or one of the other states that have recently passed legislation, it wouldn't be so scary, and we'd be able to bring this out of a place of legitimate research. So I am a patient, I'm also a researcher, and I'm also a social worker. So I thought that that also could kind of give me a unique perspective into some of the social support benefits that go on at facilities. So I'm going to talk a bit about my study. And I'm going to give just a quick, a lot of you guys probably already know all this, but just a bit about the facility history, you know, the medical cannabis facilities. And I use facility and dispensary interchangeably, and there's a reason for that. I did some pretesting with the surveys I did for my study, and some of the feedback that I got was that some of the facilities, dispensaries, preferred to be called facilities because dispensary might lead to some incriminating activity. So I use facility in my research report. But I mean the same thing. So what was going on in Dennis Perone's home was really more of the social model. Lester Grinspoon kind of coined these terms of the social model and the pharmacy model, medical cannabis dispensary. And the social club model is pretty much what it sounds like. It's really not just about the dispensing of medication, but it's about the social support, and it's about addressing not only the medical needs of patients, but the social and emotional needs of patients as well. And this is kind of on the other end of the spectrum from the pharmacy model, which is how the medical cannabis system is carried out in Amsterdam, which is really more of a Walgreens-style pharmacy. You walk in, you get your medication, and you leave. Not the coffee shops, but the medical cannabis dispensing itself. And some people do prefer this. So I think that it's important to study both types of facilities and kind of figure out what's working and what's not so that we can kind of offer both types to patients. The rules, as you know, vary from city to city as in the Bay Area as far as medical cannabis facilities. The three cities in the Bay Area that I was kind of focusing on were Oakland, Berkeley, and San Francisco, although my study sites were both all in Berkeley and San Francisco. And then there's also a question of what's going on in unincorporated areas. They also don't really know what to do. And something that I was noticing was that there were a lot of moratoriums being issued in unincorporated areas around the development of medical cannabis dispensaries. And I felt that one of those reasons was because they didn't really know what to do. And it wasn't that they were against it necessarily or for it necessarily, but they had a lot of questions. And they really didn't know how this was going to fit into their landscape. They were afraid of making bad decisions. And again, this is one of the reasons I felt this study was important, because it gives people something to look at. And I also noticed that a lot of the debate around medical cannabis facilities was about the zoning. And is it this close to a school? And is it, can people smoke outside? And should we have parking? And do they need this license or that license? And what was kind of being left out of the discussion was, what do the patients want? You know, when you start any new business or even a medical health service, because you want to know who your patients are. Who are you serving? What do they like? What do they want? What, you know, what works best for them? And this was kind of being left out of the discussions that were going on in City Hall, and which is another reason I thought it was important to do this study. So my study was both a description of medical cannabis patients and a description of facilities. So I had a patient-based evaluation of services at 7 different facilities and also a description of the service utilization patterns of the facilities. The description of medical cannabis patients I looked at, and this was 130 anonymous surveys, and God bless them, each one was 20 pages long, and they were really hard to get through. But, you know, I was sitting in these facilities for 7-8 hours at a time, and we had a good time and made a day of it, so it was a great experience. So I was looking at demographics like gender, ethnicity, and income, whether or not patients had health insurance, the length of time of their symptoms, and how long they've been treated. I had a measure of general health status that covered physical, emotional, and general health. And then I also looked at two issues, one of self-medication and the other of substitution. There's been some really interesting work by Dr. McAria around substituting cannabis for alcohol, also for other drugs, and also the presence of self-medication. You know, we've kind of talked about the spectrum of what is medical, what is not medical, and if I take an aspirin and I just go decide to take that aspirin, is that self-medication? Well, of course it is. I decided to do it. If I go have a cup of coffee in the morning, I don't need a doctor's prescription to do so. I've decided to do it, and that's self-medication as well. So that was another concept that I was interested in. And then I also had an alcohol treatment component, and the reason I did this was because I noticed there were a lot of similarities between 12-step programs and the social model of medical cannabis clubs, and that there really wasn't an expert on hand. Like, there's nobody in the club with, like, a white coat who's standing there, you know, with some kind of stethoscope to administer your medication. The people that work there mostly are patients. They are people that can relate very well to the people that they're serving. That was where the alcohol interest came from. So I wanted to know if medical cannabis patients had been previously in alcohol treatment. If they had, was it their choice to go? And then their satisfaction with various types of alcohol treatment. So we could maybe look at some commonalities between alcohol treatment models such as 12-step versus like a hospital inpatient program and different dispensary models like the social club model versus the pharmacy model. So besides the 130 patient surveys, I also collected 7 manager surveys from each of the 7 facilities where I did my research, because I wanted to know a lot about the environmental characteristics. Because if we know a lot about the patients and what they want, we also need to know what's going on in the building and what the experiences are of the managers so that we can develop good services. So I asked the managers about how long they'd been in service, their hours, square footage, what the ID requirements were to enter, rules and regulations in the facility, the staff makeup, so, you know, do they have counselors on staff? Do they employ legal counsel, security? What products are offered? And this includes cannabis and non-cannabis products. What services are offered besides the distribution of cannabis? And what the reported political and legal relationship has been like with the medical cannabis facilities and local government and police. So the patient-based evaluation of services, I really just wanted to know how satisfied patients were with the services they were receiving at the facilities. And these were across 4 different dimensions: general satisfaction, access, interpersonal, and privacy. I used a standardized test in order to gather this. Privacy I added on my own. And then service utilization, after I went to each facility and had managers fill out surveys and tell me what services they offered, I then developed site-specific patient surveys so that when I went back to the facility to give the patient survey, they were only asked about services that that facility offered. That way I figured it wouldn't be as confusing. And I wanted to look at the social model and the wide variety of services that are offered. So my methods, this is a little science-y and I apologize. It was exploratory cross-sectional survey design. I had 130 patient surveys at 7 study sites, 2 in Berkeley and 5 in San Francisco. And I had the facility level and patient level data. I collected the data myself. All the surveys were anonymous. And I had people fill out surveys at the facilities themselves so that they could capture the satisfaction. The measures I used, I designed my own survey. I also had 2 standardized pieces. I used the RAND 36-item health survey in order to capture health status and the patient satisfaction questionnaire 3 in order to capture satisfaction data. So how did I go about collecting this? Well, I basically just went to a facility. I got a list off the internet from the California Normal website, and I identified a few in several areas of San Francisco because I wanted to cover. And I just went and I brought my little Berkeley business cards and my little human subjects has approved this study form. And I just asked them if they wanted to participate. And I said they'd be completely anonymous. All patients would be completely anonymous. And then I explained the purpose and that I really wanted to take what was going on here and start publishing it in social work journals and in public health journals and in public policy journals. And I wanted people from other states to be able to read this information and to use this information. And people were really, for the most part, very supportive. I sampled from inside the facility. Some surveys were self-administered. However, if there was a vision problem or a literacy problem, I administered the survey. And I just asked everyone that came in if they wanted to participate. And I stayed at each place for about 4 hours or so. And then I would just visit them at various times during the week. So how much time do I have? I'm going to go through my results because that's probably what you guys wanted to see, huh? So first I'm going to talk about patient satisfaction, and I think that this is really important. As some of my other activist friends have told me, this is what's going to be the soundbite. I don't have on here the comparison data, but the sample of 2,000 medical patients that the patient satisfaction questionnaire was normed on, meaning that they gave it to 2,000 people to see what the general feeling of satisfaction was in the country around medical services, and it's significantly lower than the satisfaction reported by medical cannabis patients. The scores, if one is a perfect score for satisfaction for medical cannabis patients, ranged from 0.77 to 0.87, and for the national average is 0.5 to 0.65. So I think that that's showing that, you know, in addition to just dispensing cannabis, there's something going on that patients are really responding to. And this is on the privacy scale. And then another question I thought was important to ask was, why did you choose this particular facility today? Because I think it's important to know that what patients deem important when choosing what facility to go to. So I had all these different reasons, and then they could rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, each one with 10 being the most important, a most important reason and 1 being a least important reason. And as you can see, facility, familiarity, comfort and security, and the staff were the three highest rated reasons why someone would choose a facility, which really speaks, I think, to what we've heard all along, was that patients really appreciate that the staff knows them and that they know the other people there and that they know what's going to happen when they come into a facility. They know what to expect. They know what kind of ID they need. They know what the process is going to be like. And I think that that's something that we've really developed well in California because people are really very the next day because I know the people there and I just feel really comfortable. So this is some of the results from the organizational data. I have a lot of patient information, but since this talk specifically is about the cannabis dispensaries, I'm going to focus more on the organizational data. So here are the 7 facilities. NA means not available because I gave the option to not answer any questions that anybody felt uncomfortable with at all. So we have 7 facilities. As you can see, they've been open ranging from 30 months to 150 months. And the number of patients seen per week ranges from 200 to 525 patients per week. And the number of services that are offered ranges from 0, which is a pharmacy model dispensary, to 17 services in addition to dispensing marijuana. These are the documentation needed for entry. As you can see, in most dispensaries, you just need your medical marijuana ID card. However, it was observed in some of the dispensaries that the very first time you visit, you also need to provide a state ID. Other rules I looked at included whether you were allowed to use cannabis on site at all. And as you can see, only 1 out of the 7 you were not, and that was the pharmacy model. Whether you could use inside, whether there was a time limit on how long people could stay, whether there was a limit on the type of use that could be, whether vaporizing versus smoking, and whether or not tobacco was allowed. And so here is an example of some of the cannabis products and non-cannabis products that are offered. And I think that this is some of the information that's really important to get out to the public, especially when they just have this kind of narrow-minded view of what goes on in medical cannabis dispensaries. Because as you can see, of course, there's the buds, the flowers, and the edibles, but there's also tincture, which people, you know, mix in tea, salve, which is topical, butter, peanut butter, hash, and kief, and then non-product cannabis products like coffee and snacks and paraphernalia and T-shirts and books and games and food and meals and things like that. Another thing I think is really interesting is who's on staff at some of these facilities. The facilities that I sampled had social workers, counselors, records keepers, legal counsel, security, cooks, and groundskeepers all working on staff. I know a lot of other facilities have masseuses and acupuncturists that work on staff. A lot volunteer their time. And these are the services offered. Again, I think this is another thing that's really important to get out to the public, because as you can see, and this is just the first page of services, besides cannabis dispensing, there is a myriad of services that are being offered. And, you know, there's some research on coping styles. And when people have chronic illness, there's basically two types of coping styles. There's the style where people really talk about their illness and they really share and vent, and it really surrounds what they're going through. And then there's the coping style where they don't want to think about it. You know, they're tired of thinking about how sick they are. They just want to have fun. They just want to relax. They just want their minds to be on something else for a little while. And one of the things I noticed was that the cannabis facilities really represent both styles of coping strategies, because you have their groups that are centered around certain illnesses or for certain populations with an illness, such as women or men or veterans. There's groups surrounding issues of addiction like NA and AA. But then there's also groups like writers groups and quilters groups. I went to bingo. It was so much fun. Open mic nights and poetry readings. There's cannabis-related services, like classes on how to grow, classes on how to protect yourself legally, vaporizer lessons. There's social services like housing help, food, hospice delivery, referrals. And there's community events. One of the facilities I went to in San Francisco organizes clothing drives for the community. And then there's things like doggy daycare, which is just a really cute service. But if you have a lot of medical appointments or you have to go to work, you can drop your dog off and pick them up when you're done. So what's next? Well, lots of publishing, I hope. But I'd also like to look at this data and compare it to some of the national data, which I've done already in satisfaction, but also kind of looking at the issue of substituting cannabis for other drugs and self-medication. I also think it would be great to develop a best practice model of service delivery so that other states can start medical cannabis facilities, and in-depth studies of innovative facilities such as the Berkeley Patients Group, which I know just opened a new health center nearby where they offer yoga and all kinds of extra services. So I think maybe looking at one club really in depth and providing an evaluation type report would also be helpful. And I think there's lessons for service integration for other health and social services. I mean, coming from a social work background, I know that service integration is something that we've struggled with forever, and providing a continuum of care so where people go to get their food stamps are also getting their substance abuse counseling, and they're also getting their welfare counseling, and they're also getting their job training all in the same building. And I think that a lot of that's going on in these cannabis facilities. And people go to get their medicine, but they stay because they feel supported and they feel like they're getting something out of it besides just the cannabis. And that's what I really want to get into academia. That's what I really want to get into the journals. And that's what I really want to get into the public. Because I think once the public sees the benefits of these facilities and what's really going on, that it's not only going to benefit the medical cannabis community, but it's going to benefit the rest of the health and social service community, because we can learn from each other. So thank you. And I'll take any questions if we have any time. Oh, questions at the end. Thank you.